TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Naomi Klein, Change the System, Not the Climate. Naomi Klein is best known for her book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate. She wrote, "It's not about carbon, it's about capitalism. And we can seize this existential crisis to transform our failed economic system and build something radically better." An important document to its building a better future is the LEAP Manifesto. It calls for a restructuring of the Canadian economy and an end to the use of fossil fuels. The LEAP Manifesto was initiated in the spring of 2015 at a two-day meeting in Toronto. Among those who wrote it were representatives from Canada's Indigenous rights, social and food justice, environmental, faith-based, and labor movements. Naomi Klein gives a summary of the manifesto in the talk you are about to hear. A manifesto that can play a role in other countries as well. Naomi Klein was recorded at the Grand Conference, Change the System, Not the Climate, in August 2016 in Canada. Most of us know Naomi Klein from her frequent visits to the U.S., but it is moving to hear her speak at home, engage with criticism of Justin Trudeau, express her allegiance with the Indigenous base, and even find out why she was born in Montreal, not in the U.S.
Alors, recevons Naomi Klein, je vous prie.
Merci, Roger. Bonjour et bienvenue tout le monde. We are on Indigenous land, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee people and the Algonquin people. Those of you who traveled great distances to be here, welcome. Those of you who had wanted to attend the forum as participants, as speakers, who were registered but denied visas by the Canadian government, you are deeply missed. Shame indeed. I was at the first World Social Forum in Porto Alegre 15 years ago. And now I've been to the first World Social Forum, because this is not a World Social Forum. Not when 70% of the people from the Global South who applied for visas were denied visas. Canada, I'm afraid, is not as seen on TV. Apparently, the Canadian government was worried that the World Social Forum delegates would overstay their visas. Never mind that the delegates applying for those visas from places like Mali and Palestine and Ecuador are the last people likely to overstay their visas and try to move to Canada. These are political leaders and community organizers of the first order intensely committed to changing their homelands. That commitment is what unites so many people who are here. The tourists from the U.S., on the other hand, these are the ones vowing to move to Canada if Donald Trump is elected. I keep my eye on them. Now, I shouldn't joke about this, because this is something that I actually know a little bit about. I was born in this city in 1970 because my father, a U.S. citizen, did not want to be a soldier in the Vietnam War. Under Justin Trudeau's father, my parents were waved through the border and were free to stay and build their lives here. But Canada is not like that today. In fact, there are dozens of U.S. soldiers and veterans who have fled to Canada over the past 12 years because they refused to fight an illegal war in Iraq. And here, they have faced deportation, legal harassment, and live in limbo, constantly afraid that they will be deported and jailed in the United States. It began under our last government, but nothing has changed so far for Iraq war resistors. And let me state the obvious. These men and women are heroes. They stood up to the most powerful military force on earth, refusing to be complicit in war crimes, refusing to fight a war for oil, which has a little to do with climate change, our topic tonight. These issues are all interconnected. A digression, perhaps, but it's an important reminder how much easier it is to change a country's image than it is to change its policies. How much more comfortable neoliberal politicians are with progressive marketing and small, largely symbolic steps than with the substantive work of system change. But nothing less than system change will allow us to do what's necessary to avert catastrophic warming in the short time that remains. And because we live in a time when politics is treated as a spectator sport, it's always important to remember that our fragile atmosphere is utterly indifferent to cheering and hugging politicians at international summits. Same goes for small steps in the right direction, which we're always told we should accept, and that's all we are allowed to demand. All that matters is now how much carbon is allowed to accumulate year on year. The rest is just noise. Some of you will recall that Canada made quite an impression during the Paris Climate Summit last December. Canada stood with some of the most vulnerable countries in the world and argued that the temperature target in the agreement should not be to keep warming below 2 degrees Celsius, but that it should be 1.5, and we got some of that language in the agreement. That was a proud moment for Canada, and Justin Trudeau said, "Canada is back." Remember that? And that's true. Back to the same old tricks. Trudeau and his ministers returned home and joined with the Alberta government to push new tar sands pipelines like Energy East that would endanger water systems in this province and in this very city. That mega pipeline, that $16 billion pipeline, is utterly incompatible with the temperature targets that we ourselves championed, because it is linked to massive expansion of one of the dirtiest sources of carbon on the planet, the Alberta tar sands. And scientists have told us that if we're serious about 2 degrees, 80% of it has to stay in the ground, more for 1.5. Our government did this for a simple reason. It may want to do the right thing when it comes to climate. I have no doubt that they do. But when it comes to economics, it is still locked within a logic that seeks economic growth at all costs and is terrified of real industrial planning or, God forbid, advocating reduced consumption among wealthy over consumers. So, Canadians are asked to live with the cognitive dissonance of saying one thing to the world and doing precisely the opposite at home. In truth, this is familiar territory. Canada is founded on broken treaties. Ask any Indigenous person on Turtle Island. Breaking our sacred word is a national tradition. It's heritage, and it will continue unless we as social movements band together and stop it inside Canada and around the world, particularly those movements in nations that are most impacted by climate change, and this is a movement that must be led by Indigenous people in this country. Perhaps it seems I'm being overly hard on the Trudeau government. It's much better than the last gang with their permanent snarl. This government's unofficial slogan, those of you who are from out of town, is sunny ways. Well, we need more than sunny ways. We need solar power, and we need it everywhere, with that power generation owned in common by communities and not by private players. But, of course, to do that, we would need to break all the rules in the neoliberal playbook, and that's why this discussion is about the need for system change if we are going to be serious about climate change. We need to stand up to those fossil fuel giants and the banks that fund them. We need to take back our energy grids from private players. We need to embrace our right to plan our economies. And we must wage war on the logic of austerity, which is itself at war with life on Earth. There are more ways that climate change highlights the need for system change, and our wonderful panelists tonight are going to be getting into more detail. Another example, all this green talk in the world doesn't matter if our governments keep pushing trade deals like the TPP, TTIP, and CETA, which allow corporations to sue our governments when they do the right thing and stand up to multinational corporations. You know, TransCanada currently is suing the US government for saying no to the Keystone XL pipeline. They want $15 billion in damages. Quebec provided an early warning for all of this, because Quebec was one of the first regions in the world to pass a fracking moratorium. And it was a historic movement-led victory, and it inspired people around the world. But there is a gas company, pretending actually to be a U.S. gas company, that is using NAFTA to challenge the Quebec fracking ban, is seeking damages. It claims that it violates its right to frack for gas under the St. Lawrence. So these are a few of the ways that climate change changes everything. It changes it because our current economic and political system blocks meaningful climate action at every turn, which means that system change is a matter of survival. Trudeau is a good student. He studied Obama. He knows how to look cool while selling arms to repressive regimes and peddling job-killing trade deals. He thinks we're going to be satisfied with parades and weekly viewings of his pecs. No matter how grave the problem, the war waged on the bodies of Indigenous women, indefinite detention of migrants, the climate crisis, the water crisis, the solution is always the same: consultation, further study, inquiry. Meaningful action is always off in the distance. Words and pictures, mots et des images. Well, someone needs to tell our selfie-loving PM that we are up against the wall. And words and pictures aren't going to cut it, because this moment in our history, this is the era of the deed. Ceci est l'ère de l'action. When it comes to climate change, that means doing whatever it takes to bring down greenhouse gas emissions, not incrementally, but radically. For wealthy countries like Canada, if we're going to do our share, we need to be cutting our emissions by 10% a year. That's huge. That's unprecedented. So call it what you will, a Green New Deal, a great transition, a Marshall Plan for planet Earth, but make no mistake. This is a civilizational mission, not an add-on, one more item to add to a governmental to-do list, some special interest to satisfy. But let me stress something else. It is also not about saying that climate change is so big and so urgent that it should trump everything else. Like, first we'll save the planet and then we'll worry about poverty and inequality and racism. No. That's how we lose. That's how we divide ourselves. What we need to do is recognize that we live in a time of overlapping, intersectional crises. Yes, the climate crisis, but also the crisis of institutionalized racism, the crisis of economic exclusion on a massive level, the crisis of militarism. And we need to design and then fight like hell for integrated solutions, ones that radically bring down emissions at the same time as they create huge numbers of unionized jobs and deliver meaningful justice to Indigenous people and other communities that have gotten the worst deal under the current extractive economy. And in North America, that overwhelmingly means communities of color. In other words, system change. The good news is that change is in the air. We see evidence of it everywhere, from the incredible rise of social movements like Black Lives Matter, I Don't Know More, No One Is Illegal, fearlessly taking on state and corporate power. And we see it in the political sphere. We see it with Bernie Sanders' historic campaign to lead the Democratic Party. Bernie showed that what for decades was unsayable can now be said out loud. Free college tuition, double the minimum wage, 100% renewable energy, and the crowds cheered. He almost won. We saw it. We see it. Yeah, I think that deserves a... We see it in Jeremy Corbyn's rise to the leadership of the British Labour Party and the determination of his supporters to keep him there despite relentless attacks and subversion. We see it in the rise of Podemos in Spain, in the election of Syriza in Greece, even in the global popularity of Pope Francis, who speaks about capitalism as a cancer. This is a huge shift. The intellectual fencing that has constrained the left's imagination for so long lies twisted on the ground. It began, in a sense, at the first World Social Forum 15 years ago. I covered that forum for The Nation, and I wrote at the time that this marked the end of history, this lie that we had been told, that it was all over, that there was only one way to run the world now. Those were the first cracks in the facade, and then came the 2008 financial crisis, which threw a brick through the window. Suddenly, there was no one left to defend neoliberalism on its ideological merits. That doesn't mean it's dead. They smuggle it in post-crisis, from post-Brexit UK to post-coup Brazil to post-failed coup in Turkey. Any crisis will do. But just because one ideological project has lost the argument does not mean that a better one automatically rises up to replace it. As much as we celebrate our victories, we also have to be honest with ourselves. Have we put forward a genuine alternative worldview, one powerful enough to rival capitalism, to rival extractivism? There is no question. We've gotten very good at saying no. No to austerity, to imperialism, to corporate trade deals, to new wars. But 15 years after the end of history, left governments are in crisis. From Caracas to Athens, increasingly in conflict with the social movements that brought them to power, that know they're better than the alternative, but also that they're not good enough. And that's partly because the left imagination, while slowly freeing itself from neoliberalism, is not yet truly liberated. Too often, it remains shackled by developmentalism, by extractivism, unable to imagine an economic model that goes beyond nostalgia for a Keynesian or industrial socialist past. So too often, we remain stuck in old battles that we should have overcome by now, asking people to choose between jobs and the environment, poverty, or pollution. These false choices weaken and divide us, and we cannot afford that. Because our movements are not the only ones moving into the vacuum left by the collapse of neoliberal ideology. The shadow of the fascist right looms larger every day. From Trump to Le Pen, to the open racism of parts of the Brexit movement, and on and on. And if we want to win against the powerful seduction of that easy hatred, we will have to go deeper and further. That means more than just a list of demands, but a new story, a shared narrative, intersectional, integrated, and most of all, inspiring. I want to share with you an attempt that Roger mentioned that I've been involved in here in Canada called the Leap Manifesto. About 11 months ago, a group of us here in Canada launched this 1,400-word document. It came out of a meeting of 60 organizers, theorists, movement leaders from across the country. Roger was there, Clay was there. Many people in the room were there, part of drafting this. It was hard, it was difficult, but we created a space to dream, to not just agree on what we were against, but to think about the much better world that we could create. We asked ourselves the question, if we took the science of climate change seriously, how could we transition off of fossil fuels in that way that solved multiple crises at once? So we came up with this consensus document, and there was a thread running through it. And the thread was the need to move from an economy based on endless extraction, not just from the earth, but from workers' bodies, from our social safety net, of taking and taking as if there is no limit, as if there is no breaking point, to a culture of caretaking, of respecting the cycles of regeneration, of caring for one another and caring for the earth, of cherishing beauty, creation, each other, young and old. This shift is fundamentally a rejection of the sacrifice zone mentality that some people and some places count for less. So it begins by acknowledging the original caretakers of the land, water, and air. One of the key demands is the full implementation of the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, something our current government says it is doing at the same time as it approves projects like the mega dam of Tsite Sea, expressly opposed by Indigenous people who are impacted by it. One of the key demands of the LEAP is for energy democracy, that as we move from fossil fuels to renewables, we don't just want to be buying our solar panels from Exxon and Chevron. We want their money to pay for it in reparation for the damage that they have caused, but we want communities to own and control their own renewable energy projects. We were inspired by the incredible example of what Taggio has been involved in Germany, but we also wanted to go further. We want energy justice, which means that as we transition, we want to heal the wounds that date back to the founding of our country, which is why the LEAP states that indigenous peoples and others on the front line of industrial activity should be first to receive public support for their own clean energy projects, that this needs to be policy. Other points of unity, I'm almost out of time, but other points of unity that we found was connecting the treatment of the horrible treatment of migrants that this people at this forum have caught a glimpse of in this incredible double standard in the way visa applicants were treated. We acknowledge the role that our government has played in pushing people off of their lands, whether through illegal wars, whether through corporate trade deals, or whether through climate change itself. And as such, it calls for full rights for all workers, regardless of immigration status, and opening our borders to many more migrants and refugees. We call for big investments in green infrastructure, as you would imagine, right? Renewables, efficiency, transit, high-speed rail, all of that. We say these have to be union jobs paying a living wage, and we know that rather than fighting over the scraps of few jobs created over a pipeline, that these jobs in these sectors create 6 to 8 times more jobs than the ones created by the oil and gas industry. So we do that, and you would expect that from a consensus document about climate change. But the other thing we wanted to do was completely redefine what a green job is. Say green job, you imagine a guy with a hard hat putting up a solar panel. Great, we want those. But we also wanted to recognize the work of caretaking, the low-carbon sectors already out there that are not recognized as being climate jobs, the work of caring for the old, for the young, for the sick, of teaching other low-carbon sectors like the arts, public interest media, the sectors that are under relentless attack by the logic of austerity. We say these are climate jobs. We say they need massive investments. And we know the money is out there. We have to go after it. That means an end to fossil fuel subsidies, another so far broken promise from the Trudeau government. Sorry for the non-Canadians, but I have to do this. Financial transaction taxes. Increased royalties on fossil fuel extraction, higher income taxes on corporations and wealthy people, a progressive carbon tax, cuts to military spending, the polluter pays. Simple rule, front lines first, polluter pays, climate justice. No more of these crappy trade deals. We don't want any more of these trade deals. We want to renegotiate the ones that we have already signed that are standing in the way of meaningful climate action. And we want a national debate on a guaranteed annual income and whether that is a real solution to keep people from feeling like they have to take these jobs and there's no alternatives. The workers that are in those high carbon sectors need to be democratically leading this transition, and they need the resources to be retrained to work in the low carbon economy. So it's a lot. It's been endorsed by 200 organizations, very diverse, from Black Lives Matter Toronto to Oxfam, to Leonard Cohen, to Montrealer, Arcade Fire, another Montreal band. Little Montreal props, sorry. The corporate press has been understated. National suicide, I believe, was the one of our national newspapers called it madness. It was described as madness, this plan for a Canada based on caring for one another and the earth, by our national newspaper, The Globe and Mail. But the really exciting thing, since we put out this blueprint, this framework, this beginning of a plan, is the way it's been picked up and built on, particularly in the trade union movement. I was on a panel this morning with Mike Palachuk, who is the head of the Postal Workers Union here in Canada. And Mike talked about incredible union, just the model of a visionary union. They are fighting for their lives. The post office is under threat of privatization, of massive cutbacks. Our previous government wanted to cancel mail delivery. And working with our team, the postal workers came up with a plan called Delivering Community Power that puts the post office at the center of a green transition. So the post office isn't just a place where you get the mail, it's also where you recharge your electric vehicles. The whole fleet would be transitioned to made in Canada electric vehicles. Postal banking, support for local green cooperatives, loans, solar panels on the roof, and doing more than delivering the mail, delivering local food and not doing door knocking for the elderly and being the center of the caring economy. This is how we need to think. And I'm so impressed with the postal workers because it shows that we can do more than just protect an unacceptable status quo. We can dream. We can dream of something better than we've ever tried before. So our corporate press has been freaking out. The political class also understated. The premier of British Columbia, right-wing premier, said that if the leap is implemented, hundreds of towns will literally be wiped off of the map. The premier of Saskatchewan said it's an existential threat. We thought that was climate change, but whatever. The exciting thing is people aren't spooked. They know this is where the future is. We understand right now that we have gone so far off course, and we have wasted so much time, that now we're just on a precipice. We have so far that we need to go, and we have so little time to get there. And when you're in a situation like that, if you take a small step off that precipice, you fall in, right? And that's why small steps in this moment in history are not enough. Now is the time for boldness. Now is the time to leap. Thank you.
That was Naomi Klein. She spoke in August 2016 in Canada at the Grand Conference, Change the System, Not the Climate. She's best known for her book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. That book tackles the most profound threat humanity has ever faced, the war our economic system is waging against life on Earth. Among her prior books are The Shock Doctrine and No Logo. Naomi Klein was one of the core group of activists who drafted the LEAP Manifesto in 2015. And you can read the text and add your name to the over 42,000 signatories. And you may see that it proves helpful where you live. Find links to Naomi Klein and the LEAP Manifesto on TUC Radio's website at tucradio.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio's free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Thank you.